Welcome to FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. I'm Nate Kazmarek, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federal Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of FedSoc Forum programs, become a Federal Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this FedSoc Forum webinar call. We're excited to host this Courthouse Steps Decision program discussing Free Speech Coalition v. Paxton, which was decided this past Friday, June 27th, in a 6-3 decision. My name is Libby Dickinson, and I'm an Assistant Director with the Federalist Society's Practice Groups. As a reminder, all opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not of the Federalist Society. In the interest of time, I'll keep the introduction brief, but if you'd like to know more about our speaker today, you can access her full bio at fedsoc.org. That is FEDSOC.org. And to that point, we are fortunate to have with us Darpana Sheth. here with us today, General Counsel with the Center for Individual Rights. Before joining CIR, Darpana served for 4 years as Vice President of Litigation for the Foundation of Individual Rights and Expression. And prior to that, Darpana was a senior attorney with the Institute for Justice, where she served as Director of the Institute's National Initiative to End Forfeiture Abuse. I'll leave it there, but one last note. Throughout the panel, if you have any questions, please submit them through Zoom's Q&A feature so that we will have access to them for when we get towards the close of our webinar. And with that, I will hand things over to Darpana. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks, Libby, for that nice introduction. And good afternoon, and thank you to the Federalist Society for hosting this Courthouse Steps webinar. Not quite on the courthouse steps, but we're still very close to the end of the term. This is on Free Speech Coalition versus Paxton, or as court watchers have been referring to it, the porn case. So for those who did not follow the case so closely, this was a First Amendment challenge to a Texas law that required certain adult websites to verify that users are in fact adults, that they're 18 or older. So last Friday, on the final day of the term, the court upheld the law in a 6-3 decision authored by Justice Thomas. The question before the court was, what is the appropriate level of scrutiny to give such a regulation? Applying strict scrutiny, the most rigorous standard of review, the district court had invalidated Texas's law. And in doing so, the court relied on a series of Supreme Court cases striking down analogous laws aimed at protecting children from sexual content. The Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, however, reversed, applying only rational basis review, as the Supreme Court had done in another case, Ginsburg versus New York. And that was a case which involved, which upheld an in-person age verification requirement for purchasing so-called girly magazines. In Paxton, the Supreme Court ruled that neither standard was correct. Because Texas's restriction implicated fundamental constitutional rights, rational basis review was not appropriate. But neither was strict scrutiny, because the majority concluded that Texas's law only incidentally burdened the protected speech of adults. Applying intermediate scrutiny, then, the court found that the law advanced the important state interest in shielding children from sexually explicit material, and that the law is appropriately tailored because users could verify their age through commercially reasonable methods like a government ID or transactional data. And because only intermediate scrutiny applied, those methods did not need to be the least restrictive means to accomplish Texas's goal. Justice Kagan, joined by Justices Sotomayor and Jackson, dissented, arguing that the correct standard was strict scrutiny. They stressed that on no fewer than 4 occasions, the court has applied strict scrutiny to invalidate regulations aimed at protecting minors from adult contact. And that was on the telephone, on cable TV, and even twice on the internet. So before we take a closer look at these opinions, let's examine what the Texas law does. So the law at issue is Texas's HB 1181. It was passed in 2023, and it requires commercial websites that publish sexually explicit content to verify that visitors are in fact 18 or older. Now, the scope of the law is that it covered all websites where 1/3 of the content is sexual material that is, quote unquote, harmful to minors. So what does that mean? What is harmful to minors? The Texas statute, like many others, takes the Miller standard for obscenity and applies it through the lens of minors. So that means it's prohibiting or restricting material that is first designed to appeal to or pander to the prurient interest when taken as a whole and with respect to minors. Second, it displays or depicts sex or human anatomy in a manner that is patently offensive with respect to minors. And three, that it lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value for minors. Now, of course, as to adults, this material is protected by the First Amendment. And everyone agrees on this point. You know, Texas, the petitioners, all of the justices agree on this dichotomy that this material is not protected with respect to minors, but it is protected speech with respect to adults. Now, let's talk a little bit more about that one-third requirement. Under Texas's law, it means it would not apply to main social media platforms like Facebook or Twitter, X, because of that one-third requirement. You know, one-third of Facebook, I guess, no matter how you slice it or dice it, would not constitute material, sexual content that would be harmful to minors. Texas also specifically included a carve out under its statute for commercial search engines. Now, if covered, these websites must use reasonable age verification methods, and it specified two forms: submitting government ID, or two, using commercially reasonable methods that use public or private transactional data. That's like your job information or maybe even mortgage data. The website could verify the age itself, or it could use third-party services to verify age. The law also required these websites to carry public health warnings, basically likening pornography to addictive or harmful substances. But that portion of the law was invalidated by the lower courts as compelled speech, and so it was not at issue before the Supreme Court. Both the District Court and the Fifth Circuit held that those kind of mandated warnings were compelled speech and therefore constitutionally impermissible. So how is this law enforced? Under Texas's law, the failure to comply opened the door to civil liability from individuals and to state enforcement through injunctive relief. If there was a violation, it could be subject to $10,000 per day fines every day the website is not in compliance. And there's an additional provision for $250,000 fine if any minors accessed sexual material because of the violation. Now, it's important to note that at least 21 other states have laws similarly imposing age gating requirements to access sexual material online that is harmful to minors. Probably one of the reasons the Supreme Court granted cert in this case. So the plaintiffs here in this case, consists of three groups. It's the Free Speech Coalition, which is the trade association, great name, for a trade association for the pornography industry. The second was a group of companies that operate adult websites. And the last was a performer of pornography and they all brought suit to enjoin Texas's law from going into effect. So this is a pre-enforcement challenge, arguing that the statute unconstitutionally hinders adults from accessing protected speech. The district court granted the plaintiff's preliminary injunction motion, finding that the plaintiffs were likely to succeed on the merits. And that's because the law restricted access to speech that is constitutionally protected for adults. It applied strict scrutiny and found that although Texas has a compelling government interest in restricting this content for minors, it was not narrowly tailored. And it was not the least restrictive means of accomplishing this goal because parents could install various software that would essentially filter content. The Fifth Circuit reversed this holding and upheld the age verification mandate under the rational basis test, which is the exceedingly deferential standard that's normally applicable to laws that do not implicate any fundamental rights. There was one dissent, Judge Higginbotham dissented, and he would have, like the district court, held that the law would be subject to strict scrutiny and found that Texas did not meet its burden in satisfying strict scrutiny. So the Supreme Court grants cert to resolve this question of the appropriate level of scrutiny. In the majority opinion authored by Justice Thomas, it begins with reviewing the background principles about the First Amendment. Of course, not all speech is protected. Restrictions of unprotected speech are subject only to rational basis review. So some of the categories of unprotected speech, one of them is obscenity, but obscenity for adults. But on the other hand, for protected speech, you can have regulations, and under our First Amendment principles, they're either divided into content-based regulations or content-neutral regulations. So content-based regulations are those that target speech based on its communicative content. They are the worst kinds of regulations. They're presumptively unconstitutional, and they're justified only if the law is the least restrictive means of achieving a compelling state interest. On the other hand, you have content-neutral restrictions of protected speech. Now, those are subject only to intermediate level of scrutiny. And that's because they pose less of a risk that targeting, less of a risk that the regulation is targeting certain ideas or viewpoints. A law will meet this standard if it advances an important government interest unrelated to the suppression of speech, and if it does not burden substantially more speech than necessary to further those interests. So just as Thomas begins his analysis noting that history, tradition, and precedent recognize that states can both first outright ban obscenity for everyone, adults and children alike, and two, that states can prevent children from accessing speech that is obscene as to them, as to minors. Now, with respect to the second authority, states, however, cannot prohibit adults from accessing content that is obscene only to minors. According to the majority, that explains why the court applied strict scrutiny to prior regulations, because they were outright bans on adults accessing protected content. The majority, and Justice Thomas notes that in the two internet cases, one was Reno versus ACLU involving the Communications Decency Act, and the second was Ashcroft versus ACLU involving the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And in those, both the federal statutes included age verification as an affirmative defense. And the majority finds that distinguishable because it means that even if somebody adopted, or even if the company or internet provider adopted approved age verification methods, that doesn't mean they wouldn't go to trial or could be subject to civil or criminal liability and go through and risk the perils of trial. Only then could they introduce an affirmative defense saying, but we implemented a method to verify age. The majority also emphasizes the date of those two decisions. So Ashcroft was the latter of the two, Ashcroft 2, and was decided in 2004. So that's almost more than 20 years ago. And since then, the majority notes the technology of the internet has evolved rapidly. You know, the rise of smartphones, this, you know, streaming on demand services is something that was not around as much, in 2004. So the consequence of that is that minors' access to sexual content online is suddenly both, I guess, quantifiably larger. There's just a lot more content, and two, it's more convenient to access in the palm of your hand. The majority goes on to note that states can enact laws, however, preventing minors from accessing speech that is obscene as to them. So while a state cannot ban the speech altogether and prevent adults from accessing it as well, it can enact laws that are aimed at verifying the ages. And so that power necessarily includes the power to require proof of age before any individual can access that content. According to the majority, it, quote unquote, follows that no person, adult or child, has a First Amendment right to access speech that is obscene as to minors without first submitting proof of age. So the majority is kind of taking instead of characterizing it as speech, as characterizing it more on a conduct, that's the access to speech, and slicing it thin to require, it's more about the, you don't have a constitutional right to verify age, to access material without verifying your age. It then goes through the kind of the history and says, you know, requiring age verification is common, to alcohol, tobacco, lottery tickets, tattoos and body piercings, fireworks, driver's licenses, all of these things. States have traditionally required some form of age verification in order for people to engage in these activities. And the court goes on to note that it's true even for fundamental rights that turn on age. So it's not just any activity like buying alcohol or tobacco. It's including activities that involve fundamental rights like accessing firearms or registering to vote or even the right to marry. And the majority looks at the Ginsburg decision and says, you know, that demonstrates that a state can require proof of age to access sexual material that is not age appropriate. And then it goes on to say that, well, the need for age verification online is even greater. You know, in an in-person context, like in Ginsburg, you know, there'll be some people at the margins, you're not sure if they're quite 18, but there's a lot of folks that you're not going to need to actually ask for their identification because it's obvious that they're an adult. And the court significantly cites Brown, the Brown decision about video games, to note that the principles of freedom of speech do not vary with different technology or different mediums. It emphasizes that Texas's law is not a ban on adults. And it interestingly finds that the law is not content-based. It says, you know, if you look at a regulation, it's either content-based on its face, the actual text of the statute, or it's content based from its justification. And here it finds that neither is true, because on its face, Texas's restriction only regulates unprotected speech or speech that is obscene to minors. And based on the justification, well, that's the same thing. It's only regulating, trying to get age verification for unprotected speech. So according to the majority, it follows that, you know, there is no First Amendment right to avoid age verification. So it very much tries to reframe the issue from being one about adult access to protected speech to one about avoiding age verification to access that content. It argues, or it holds, that any burden on adult access to protected speech is only incidental. And it draws an analogy to United States versus O'Brien. So for those of you out there who might not know this case, it's the case involving the destruction of a draft card. And, you know, it goes to what's the standard of review, or what's the standard that should apply to expressive conduct. And the majority argues that the destruction of a draft card is not itself constitutionally protected, because it's just simply a government document that serves as proof of registration. And there, in that decision, the court used intermediate scrutiny, finding only an incidental burden on First Amendment expression. The majority reasons that because accessing material that's obscene as to minors without verifying age is also not constitutionally protected, then here as well, in this context, any burden on adults getting access to the protected speech is incidental. Quote, the Justice Thomas writes, "The law directly regulates unprotected activity, which is accessing material that is obscene as to minors without submitting to age verification, while only incidentally burdening protected activity, ultimately accessing that material." And so applying intermediate scrutiny, the law passes constitutional muster. Everyone agrees there's an important government interest here, even perhaps a compelling one. And the fit is okay. The fit between the important government interest and the means by which that is affected is permissible. The exemption for search engines is okay because search engines don't generally have direct control over their content, unlike other websites. And the one-third requirement precludes application to social media sites. And importantly, Justice Thomas writes, Texas could reasonably conclude that websites with a higher proportion of sexual content could require age verification than those without that higher proportion. The majority kind of waves its hand and really dismisses the privacy concerns and chilling effect for adults, just saying, you know, in this industry, the industry is already doing this. The industry already requires age verification, you know, to access sites. So the fact that the state is doing it, these are all methods that the industry has been already using. And more importantly, or maybe not more importantly, but additionally, the industries, the website operators have every incentive to protect the privacy of their customers. If they don't do so, well, they're not going to probably get business anymore. The dissent, you know, takes a very different tack. So as I mentioned before, Justice Kagan dissented. She's joined by Justices Sotomayor and Jackson. And the dissent would have applied strict scrutiny because the law directly restricts access to constitutionally protected adult content. It accuses the majority of basically skirting the main issue. By applying intermediate scrutiny, the majority skirts the question of whether Texas can do better. Are there, in fact, less restrictive means? Now, it's important to note that, at least under the dissent's approach, it's not that they would have necessarily struck down the statute. There might not be less restrictive means, but by applying intermediate scrutiny, the court doesn't even tackle that issue and really figure out, you know, are there least restrictive means? Would content filtering work here or not? If there are not less restrictive means, then the law would survive strict scrutiny. So going backwards a bit, the dissent takes head on the whole idea that the law is not content-based, that the majority finds. The law defines speech based on the content, right? It only applies on its face to material. You have to look at, well, is it sexual content that would be harmful to minors? And then it imposes a burden, the age verification requirement, on protected speech because of that content. It, to quote the dissent, tells people entitled to view that speech that they must incur a cost to do so. That is direct, not incidental regulation of speech. It also says that the majority's attempt to distinguish precedent is not convincing, because if you look at the court's precedent, the First Amendment is not just aimed at outright bans. The First Amendment prevents making any speech hard, any protected speech hard. And so even if it is a burden, or it somehow makes accessing that speech harder, that protected speech harder, then strict scrutiny applies. And that's what the First Amendment jurisprudence has always held. The dissent accuses the majority of essentially being outcome driven, that it sort of knew what result it wanted to achieve, which is to uphold the Texas law and then pick the appropriate level of scrutiny to get at that. And the dissent stresses that the burden here is also a chilling effect, and it's not comparable to flashing an ID to get into a club. It's turning over information about yourself and your viewing habits to a website operator. And then importantly, then who knows who else? Because although I think there was some provision about, you know, the uses of the information, it was mostly just for, you know, verifying age, there was no prohibition on transferring that information later or selling that information. And there's always the possibility of hacking, which is, you know, all too real in our current climate, in how a lot of these things work. Importantly, the dissent also notes the cost on website operators. And I think that's an important distinction that the majority kind of evades. They're really focused on the users of the content. And even with the Ginsburg analogy, they're not focused on the publishers of the material. And the publishers are a whole separate group in which it's clear strict scrutiny should apply. In Ginsburg, at issue was the distributor of the material. Now, they don't necessarily have the same First Amendment rights as it does the publisher. So if you do look at sort of the publisher angle here and the cost on website operators, that's like another reason why strict scrutiny probably under the court's precedence would have made more sense. So the dissent focuses on the fact, and I think these were based on the district court findings, that any age verification system would have cost at least $40,000 for every 100,000 verifications of age, or else, of course, they have to pay the penalties, which, as I mentioned before, came up to $10,000 per day of noncompliance. The dissent also stresses the privacy implications. So requiring ID could chill lawful expression, and it would deter viewers from accessing legal material and possibly lead to potential government tracking. And as it goes through each of the four prior cases on this issue, it emphasizes, you know, the four times the court has addressed the same issue and always it has come to the same result. So case closed. And, you know, I guess we can get a little bit more into those, what those precedents were. But as I mentioned, the first one was, you know, in the context of telephones, it was a regulation banning essentially dial-up porn. And so there, the aim of the law was to restrict access to that material on the phone through for minors, but it similarly was, you know, banning it for adults. The second case was United States versus Playboy, and that involved a regulation that essentially limited sexual content on cable TV to certain hours at night, because that would mean that children were less likely to access that. And then the last two, as I mentioned, were the two internet cases, Ashcroft and Areno, and then Ashcroft. So the dissent, you know, goes through each of these cases one by one and says, look, they are on all fours. And each time the court applied strict scrutiny. So why is this different? And the dissent, as I mentioned before, warns that there might be less restrictive alternatives, but we just don't know. There might be, you know, the device level filters, parental controls, user-based tools, but the majority's approach simply skirts this inquiry and upholds the law. And finally, the dissent, you know, it's just a warning about the slippery slope, which I think is a real concern here, that if you allow age verification for this kind of content, where else is it going to be extended? You know, there's maybe something to it that there was just, you know, the particular plaintiffs here weren't as sympathetic. It's in the context of pornography. But the rationale, if we're going to characterize accessing protected speech as conduct, if we're going to characterize that as not a protected right necessarily, that instead we can kind of slice and dice the whole process of speaking into its various components, and this is accessing speech, it's not speech itself, then where is that going to leave us with other kind of activities or other protected speech? So that's the decision, both the majority and the dissent. And with that, I'll open it up for questions.
Thank you so much, Darpana. That was a great explanation of so many of the facts kind of weaving in and out through both the opinion and the dissent. While we wait for audience questions to filter in, which I will just remind our audience that you can do that through the Zoom's Q&A feature down at the bottom, and we can bring those up. I just want to start with a really, you know, overly broad one, but just as you talked about, you know, you mentioned the dissent focuses on this as well. You know, just that, you know, there could be other laws like less restrictive concerning age verification. There are a lot of states that have those on that are, you know, have those in progress right now. And I know that I think Justice Thomas cited those, a couple of those as well. Just in your opinion, do you see kind of obviously all those might be a little bit different, but how do you see this decision affecting a lot of those other laws in different states?
Yeah, I think it makes it very hard to challenge any of those laws now. I mean, now we know, you know, under this court's precedent, that means intermediate scrutiny is going to be the correct standard of review. And everyone's conceding at least the government interest part of this. So, you know, that all that leaves is the tailoring. So if Texas's law, which was pretty broadly tailored. As I understand the record, they didn't try anything else. There was no legislative findings about, well, content filtering isn't okay or anything like that. Then it's hard to imagine how they wouldn't be upheld. And in fact, you know, under intermediate scrutiny, as the dissent emphasizes, you don't need to find the least restrictive means to regulate the protected speech. So as long as it's, you know, substantially furthering, you know, the state's interest here, and, you know, it is all of these, it's not, these regulations are not banning all of the content, which is, I think, what the majority relies on. It's really just targeting the age access aspect. And so because of that, I think it's going to be really hard to mount any future challenge on age verification requirements for sexual content on online.
Right. It's less about the content and more about the access and the age. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the coming weeks or months, years. And especially, you know, as they noted in what I've seen, just the difference in how the technological medium has changed so much and how that will continue to change in the future. I mean, technology is constantly evolving, and, you know, the issues, you know, in the Playboy case versus now is so much different. Right. Could you speak a little bit more on just the technological implications, like further down, if you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially with technology, what I found interesting in the majority opinion, as I kind of alluded to before, is that, you know, usually that line about the First Amendment doesn't change based on the technology is interpreted and applied in a more speech protective way. It's that, okay, well, just because you're now online and there's all this stuff doesn't mean we're going to dilute our First Amendment principles. And this, the majority opinion here kind of flips that on its head in a way and says, well, no, actually, we're all of the, I guess, analog, the non-digital, you know, the in-person physical world, physical store kind of examples are still as applicable here. And I think that approach kind of gives short shrift to the unique dangers that technology imposes when you are online. And I think the dissent, you know, when it's talking about that privacy chilling effect, like, this is not just the adult content kind of context. You know, in the Americans for Prosperity versus Bonta case, it was talking about, you know, donations, like charitable organizations and having donors listed and their addresses and all of that information being held online and not having proper safeguards. And, you know, hacking is just so ubiquitous these days that it's, you know, a real problem. And we cannot, I think, as courts, I know you're not engaged in policymaking, but you have to look at that reality of, you know, what technology means in a digital age. And so that it does, you apply the same principles, but you have to take into account the different context because they're not exactly the same.
Yeah. On both sides of the, both sides of the coin per se.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, going broadly about the implications of this decision, as I alluded to at the end, I mean, it's not just the age verification requirements for, you know, accessing adult content that's at issue anymore, because I think the majority's decision by labeling it not a content-based, by characterizing it as not content-based, it really is going to call into question, well, what else is not content-based anymore? Yeah. You know, and Reed, the court kind of explained, well, content-based means you have to look at the content in order to figure out if this regulation is, you know, restricting speech. And, you know, in a law that requires you to look at all of the content and see if one third of it is such content, I don't know how you really get around that. And then I think what the majority is doing is saying, well, let's not be so formalistic about what content-based means. Let's look at why there is this distinction between content-based and content-neutral. And really, it was to get at the more invidious kinds of laws that are aimed at directly targeting speech because of their viewpoint and because of their content. And so if there's, it kind of leans back more into like, we're only going to apply content based if it's more like an animus thing, or it's like, you know, hostile towards the speech, or it's directly targeting that speech. So I think this decision, you know, is primed to do some mischief in that regard by broadening what content neutral means. And then also broadening what, you know, directly targeting speech versus somehow morphing it into conduct or something that's like not speech, even though it is. I mean, what, you know, what about access, like getting a library card? Is that going to suddenly not be, you know, if we're going to access, restrict access based on other things, is that somehow going to have like not pure protection now because it's more conduct? I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of other examples we can spin up here, but it makes it a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, it's certainly definitely been interesting seeing all the implications kind of line up and not knowing exactly where they're going to lead. But all right. Well, it doesn't look like we have any audience questions yet.
I understand.
All their questions are not the best. Well, I think you just answered all of them right off the bat. Everybody's statement. It was amazing. Do you have anything further you want to add? Anything that you're hoping to see from courts later on, kind of with this kind of maybe a little bit surprising turn from some of the previous age verification precedents?
No, I think I just conclude with, you know,
not to put you in the,
no, yeah, that's fine. Just conclude with, you know, kind of reiterating that I think, you know, as an attorney at a public interest organization that's, you know, devoted to defending free speech, it'll be important to keep an eye out on, kind of taking this precedent and expanding it and using it as a tool to suppress, speech by, subjecting it to a level of scrutiny and using, you know, the expansion of intermediate scrutiny. You already have intermediate scrutiny for commercial speech. Earlier, the TikTok case, even though it was like one of the emergency docket kind of, you know, very expedited thing, but that case also applied intermediate scrutiny. And now you have this. And so I see that being kind of something to be on guard for.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, now it looks like we have a couple audience questions.
Okay, great.
You have a few minutes. If you want to, so it looks like our first one is, would you be able to comment on what this means for laws like COSA that claim to be content neutral?
Oh, sorry, COSA is?
The Kids and Online Safety Act.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that this is one of the, I'm not as familiar, I guess, with exactly what COSA protects, but I thought this was, I think it was at the online, characterize it. Well, if they want to, you know, expand on that, but I think that's exactly the point, that even if when laws will claim that they're content neutral, then all of a sudden, okay, now we're under intermediate scrutiny and maybe the court will not be as searching or trying to, like, you know, take an independent look at it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. We have, does this portend anything for the whole strict scrutiny / rational basis analytical framework?
I'm not sure I understand the question. I think, like, you know, are we departing from the three tiers of scrutiny? I don't think so. I think one of the points that Justice Thomas makes is, you know, trying to explain why did the Supreme Court apply rational basis review in the Ginsburg case? You know, if it's why wasn't it intermediate scrutiny, or I guess why wasn't it rational basis? And it's like, well, especially because in O'Brien, the court does apply intermediate scrutiny. And, you know, the short answer is, well, that's because Ginsburg was decided before O'Brien, which announces the intermediate scrutiny test. So under a two-tiered framework, as between strict scrutiny and rational basis seemed to make the most sense. But now you do have this third intermediate level, and so probably making more use of that. And just to go back to the COSA question, I guess, is that the artificial intelligence, like, you know, kids in using AI or that kind of thing? I think, you know, I think the same thing holds, but just in that context, you know, there's going to be a compelling interest. I think that's going to be a hard one to argue that there's not a compelling state interest in preventing kids from that kind of manipulation of content. And then you're going to get back to the fit. Well, is there it doesn't have to be a least restrictive means of accomplishing that. So as long as it's not burdening the speech more than it's necessary, then those laws will pass muster.
Yeah. All right. I think we have time for one more, if you're okay with that. This one posed kind of an interesting, it said some websites have both explicit content and lots of non-explicit, for example, Twitter or X under its new title. Under the Texas law, would age verification be required to access all of Twitter or just the explicit content? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. And so I think on the record below, I think the dissent points out, the majority, Justice Thomas points out in a footnote that there was a question as to whether the Texas law was applying that one third requirement to the entire website or just the sexual material. And, you know, I don't think the record was clear. And the Justice Thomas says it doesn't really matter because even if it is the entire website, I mean, that's why under its approach, under both, all parties agree that something like the social media websites like Twitter or X would not be subject to this law. It will be interesting to see how Texas enforces this law, given this decision. Like, what are websites supposed to do to sort of make an inventory of all their content on their website? And, you know, maybe you don't, and then you just run afoul of it, and then you get prosecuted, and then you have to like come up with and say, well, this law doesn't actually apply to me because our content is less than a third. So I think there's going to be some practical problems enforcing the law of just, well, how do you determine which websites are covered? But at least at the margins, but, you know, on the whole thing, like, you know, search engines are completely exempted. I think larger social media platforms that are not, you know, mostly containing sexual content. But, you know, I don't know. I think with Netflix, there's, you know, I don't know how much of one third would be, especially when you're looking at obscene as to minors. I mean, I'm not even sure I understand what that means, but, you know, there's a lot of like is an R-rated movie obscene as to minors? I don't know.
Well, I mean, are we back to, you know, verifying ages before, you know, R-rated movies and that kind of thing. It would be, although I do feel one third should be pretty large. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see what they're able to enforce there. But yeah, so I think we're just about, unless you want to tackle another one, but
yeah, if there's more questions, happy to do so.
Absolutely. Let's try one more. I know, we're getting into it now. was there any evidence in the record showing actual inhibition because of the age gating? They show any of that?
I'm not as familiar with the record. Yeah. I do think the district court, I mean, that's primarily the reason the district court struck down the law under strict scrutiny, that there was this chilling effect. And, you know, there are people who are not going to want to access the content because they don't want to give a government ID. There are people who don't have government IDs. There are people who don't want to, you know, given the hacking concerns, give up their transactional data and things like that. So, yes, I do believe that the record had it. I don't know specifically what it relied on, but it was based on that record that the district court found the law did not survive strict scrutiny.
Well, I mean, Maybe this will, you know, sort of further propel those sort of the age verification blockers or, you know, the operators to, you know, further secure. Now that this is, you know, given this decision and, you know, the amount of states that are implementing this, maybe that could help further security on that end. But one can only hope.
And it did find, you know, it looked at the burden and the cost on the.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So not just the users of it, but definitely the publishers. I think it was the government in Texas that even, you know, kind of boasted that one of the content providers was already drawn out, out of business because of the law.
Oh, wow.
So
that's crazy. Well,
there was a lot of talk and oral argument about Pornhub and the amount of content that they provide and the ease at which they're distributing the content and everything. But I think there might be some smaller operators that did not survive so well.
I was going to say, I think it might vary a little bit, especially, you know, when you're talking content-based. But awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Darpana, and for sharing your insights.
Thank you. So happy to be here. And thanks so much for hosting me.
Absolutely. Thank you also to our audience for tuning in today and for your questions. And if you're interested in learning more about all of our programming here at the Federalist Society, please visit our website at fedsoc.org or feel free to send us your feedback at fedsocforums@fedsoc.org. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. For more information about the Federal Society, the Practice Groups, and to become a Federal Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.